Hello and welcome to the very Shut Up and Sit Down podcast, the podcast all about games, board games, and the people who love board games. On today's podcast, I'm Matt Lees, I'm joined by Tom Brewster.
I'm Tom Brewster, and I'm on this podcast with you, Matt Lees.
He's here.
I'm here.
And we're going to be talking about a selection of games. First of all, we're going to be talking about Match of the Century. Oh, what's the Match of the Century?
It's chess.
Sure it's not Bejeweled?
It could be. Or Candy Crush?
Yeah, it could be one of those. Yeah. We'll find out. Also going to be talking about a couple of Tetromino-based games.
Mind Space and Junk Drawer, a game about sorting out your junk drawer.
Sorting out your junk, and sorting out your brain.
Putting some sellotape and scissors into a drawer. Do you get it? Because that was implying that the brain is the junk drawer.
Yeah. I don't have to put any junk into my drawer. It's just constantly sliding in. It's like a bin.
It just happens. And it just appears.
Endless bin.
A little junk fairy deposits it for you.
Every night, the junk fairy comes into your room and gives you a bad idea.
You've been a very
good boy. In exchange for a pound that you've put underneath your pillow. Finally, we're going to be talking today about Shenanigrams, a game of words that's really annoying and I think is supposed to be.
Yeah.
Which is kind of perfect.
You're raccoons and you're making letters big and words bigger.
Yes. And are you good at words? Then you'll be fine at it. Are you not good at words and you're good at being annoying? You might be better. Have fun.
Find out more on this.
The podcast.
The podcast. First game we're going to talk about on this podcast is Match of the Century, a game designed by Paolo Mori, published by Deep Print / Capstone Games.
Match of the Century, finally a board game about football.
I'm so sorry, Matt. We played, it was chess.
I'm so sorry. You've played it and it's not about football.
You, the whole time you were thinking like, the rook's defense. I don't know anything about
chess.
How
do I get a knight to kick the ball into the goal? Because that's where the big points are.
It's actually called Match of the Century, Spassky versus Fischer, a game which is basically, it's chess, but it's not chess.
It's about Bobby Fischer and
Boris Spassky.
Boris Spassky. And there was a typo in the beginning of the book about the history of these two.
Which is longer than the manual.
That is a very long document explaining why you should care about Match of the Century and why it's historically relevant.
Why do I care?
And the first time they name Bobby Fischer, there is a typo that says booby. And I'm not saying this to be puerile. I'm saying this because I didn't know anything about these characters at all. And I read that and I kept calling him Bobby Fischer. And Tom thought I was just being puerile. But actually, it's because of a typo.
I'm really glad that we've straightened that out.
Seven out of ten.
It's almost like... this game is weird. It's conceptually quite hard to describe to the listeners at home. It is a game where you do not play any chess, but it is a game about chess. It is a game simulating or retelling a series of chess games that happened between Boris Spassky and Bobby Fischer at the height of the Cold War.
Yeah.
As the historical document decrees.
When things were really chilly.
When things were really freezing. Yeah. They say global warming isn't real.
Yeah.
Well, it was so cold back then.
It was so cold in the Cold War.
So frosty.
People on both sides of the world were like, can we not just turn up the thermostat a little
bit? Just a little.
Cuban Missile Crisis.
Please.
Just a little bit.
Now it feels
even chillier. I don't like it.
Brrr.
But despite love of this cold, people still managed to come together and
to find warmth by the hearth of the chess game.
I'm going to be honest with you. I cannot envision a world in which people, and this is kind of going to give away sort of my feelings broadly towards the game.
Right.
I can't envision a world where you have two states in a Cold War and people really go out of their way to organize a chess game between somebody from each of the countries and people are like really excited about that.
Right.
And that's mainly because I'm not interested in chess, but I think it would be like League of Legends. I also wouldn't be interested. I think the idea of getting around war and having these humanitarian moments, it's like classic like story of people playing football at Christmas at the trenches, you know, and then going back to shooting each other the next day, presumably. That's good. I think people being like, you know what, actually, can we try and get around war and just be humans while all of this stupid war happens? That's great.
Yes.
But people getting really excited about chess, I can't get it.
That was very incoherent. Thank you for sharing. Are you saying that you can't get behind this game's portrayal of the chess game as almost like it's like a simulacra. It is a theatrical production of a world powers fighting. You don't think people would care about it in that way?
I don't know.
Okay.
I think it's, I'm not making a statement about anything really.
I think, just don't care about chess.
I find it fascinating.
Okay.
Because this story, it's clearly like lots of people I think will be shaking their heads now and going, like, oh, this is a big deal. It was really cool. And I'm not disagreeing with people about that, right?
Yeah.
I'm just saying I'm odd because I can't get excited about it. But clearly at the time, people did, and it was a big thing.
People were hype about chess.
Because this whole game is about these sequence of matches between these mm-hmm. two people during the Cold War mm-hmm. and about this hype about how are we going to get them in the same place?
Yep.
I've completely forgotten the chess lore in the book.
There was a lot of chess lore.
Was it Norway or was it Switzerland?
I've absolutely no idea. I didn't even read the chess lore.
Right.
I tried to sort of scrape all meaning I could from this game by the cards, by looking at the text on the cards.
Yeah.
Which will be like, Spassky does something freaking crazy.
Yeah.
Fisher does something nutso.
Yeah, this guy's tired. He's tired of chess.
He's so
This
sleepy.
Other guy, he's played a complicated game. And yeah, so the cards, it's a card game.
Shall I explain how the game
works? It's a card game.
It's a card game.
Of course. A card game about chess.
We talked about this very briefly. We mentioned this game. Me and Quinn's talked about it on the Essen special because I played it at Essen and then I've played it again just a few days ago mm-hmm. with Matt. This is a game where you are playing a card-driven war game where you have a hand of cards. You're going to be playing them into a central board in a series of exchanges. Each exchange, you play a card, your opponent plays a card, and you work out which card is higher. I play a 5, Matt plays a 4, I'm the winner. Depending on which slot you play that card in, there's 4 slots, you'll assign some advantage. So let's say I played my card in the 3 slot, and then I won. I get 3 advantage. And then that advantage is almost like a little tug of war game. I get 3, Matt gets 3, it's still on the 0 space. Then I get 2, and then Matt gets 4, and it swings all the way over to Matt's side, and then Matt wins that game, because you have 4 exchanges, and then that's the end.
It's kind of exactly the same as in Paolo Mori's Blitzkrieg.
Yeah.
Having that, you know, the wars in the different theatres being represented by these kind of
yes.
push and pulls. And
yes.
If you get it all the way to one end, then it's like, boomf.
Yeah,
you've won today's chess war.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean you've won the game.
No.
Because you've just won a match, maybe?
This is showing off a sort of like, the main thing this game is sort of simulating is like a whole tournament. It's
yeah.
like a series of games, because after each game that you play, or in between games, or as a result, or during the games, you might take mental fatigue that is going to make your hand size smaller. It will reduce the number of these little colourful player pawns that you get.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of made fun of the fact that obviously, The Queen's Gambit mm-hmm. was a very popular TV show a few years ago. It was good. I liked it. And there was a brief surge of people getting really into chess.
Yes.
And then Netflix brought out a Queen's Gambit board game, mm-hmm. which was not chess.
It wasn't chess.
And that seemed silly. And yet this is kind of the same thing. The fact that you get these pawns, but you're not playing chess with the
no.
pawns. You're just adding a pawn to get +1 to your score.
to your card, yeah.
And I like the idea when we were playing that you might turn up particularly frazzled to a chess game, and because you look so tired, like an umpire comes over and takes away 3 of your pawns to begin with. Yeah. Like, sucker.
You're so sleepy, so you're not allowed to play with your rook this game.
Yeah, right.
I'm so sorry. But then if you manage to sort of save up your mental reserves between games, then you'll start with like a bigger hand size, more pawns, or maybe even advantage.
Yeah.
You might gain or lose advantage at the start of the game. And I think that that's what makes it like, in terms of, is this game, because we all laughed at that Queen's Gambit game because it wasn't chess.
Yeah.
And I think that this, you know, everyone who I showed this to went, this seems a little silly, like it, because it's a chess game, but you don't play any chess.
I think it does do a really good job, though, of not being about chess.
100%.
I think it's a really good representation of tournament fatigue.
Yes.
And like, I think it's interesting that it's about chess,
mm-hmm.
because I feel like the only reason it's about chess is because obviously you have this historical connection to these two mm-hmm, characters, mm-hmm. these two real people who were chess players, and then you have chess piece components
yeah.
to mark things on the board.
Which look lovely.
I mean, they're chess pieces.
They're chess pieces.
They're just nice chess pieces, and they're not white and black, because
no.
they don't have to be.
They're red and blue.
America and Russia.
Mm,
both of the two flavors of chess.
Of person.
And it does do a really good job of having this push and pull, and I think that, you know, one of the cards that yeah, both of us in our deck was like, you play this and you just lose.
Yeah,
you lose the round, but then you get an advantage. So it is almost like, I need a nap.
I forgot to explain like the most important part of the game. That's the thing that makes people go like, ooh, Ooh, which is that those exchanges where if you play like a five and someone plays a four, you win, whatever. You, if you win, your opponent gets the effect on their card.
Yeah.
So the core action of the game is like posing your opponent a question. You're going like, hey, I'm going to play this four, which is a strong card.
Yeah.
You can beat it, but I get a little bonus. Or do you want to be, you know, or do you want to concede to that card? And I think that's just such a lovely rhythm. And there's also, on top of that, there's this very nice mechanic of...
When you match it?
When you match it, when you match it, that nothing.
Because yeah. I felt like that was even more powerful in a way, because being able to be like, you know what, I'm not going to beat you, so you're not going to get the bonus, but also you're not going to win either.
Yes.
So neither of us are going to get anything.
Yeah.
And being able to match that number exactly, so they didn't get the bonus they wanted, particularly when they played. Well, when I played a low card because I really needed that bonus, and you knew that.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to just match it so nothing happened, I didn't get anything. Was brutal, particularly as that point in the game, I'd kind of exhausted myself and you were on fire. So you were just naturally in a winning position. So again, it's like, as a metaphor, it works for war, any sport. The fact that it's mental fatigue, it could have been physical fatigue.
Yes, no, for
and
sure.
It could have been like...
It could have been a wrestling match.
Wrestling, football, World Cups. It could have been
maybe that's almost anything.
Maybe
that's what the series... Holy moly. If you're Capstone Games / Deep Print / Paolo Mori, maybe that's what you... So all your games, this is called Match of the Century, Spassky versus Fischer, right? My thinking was they'd do another game called Match of the Century, Kasparov versus Deep Blue. Did he do the go against the computer?
Yeah.
Right. But
I only know that from listening to the band...
Tropical F-Bomb Storm.
F-Bomb Storm, who have a song about that that's good.
Okay.
Anyway.
But rather than doing chess games, they should do other sports.
Anything.
Match of the Century... the Beatles versus the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, Match of the Century, quiche versus omelette. I think there's a big scope here.
There's rich historical texture to bite into here.
Yeah, and I think it's like, it's really cool though, because I think when I went on a bit of a ramble about like, I can't envision being this interested in this subject material, that's actually, I really want to get across that I'm not like negging the idea of people who do. It's more that it's fascinating to me, because I'm sure there will be people out who go, ooh, this is a fun theme. And if you love the theme, it's a solid game. I liked it.
I liked that game a lot.
I couldn't love it because I fundamentally found like I couldn't really connect with the idea of like,
yes,
even having watched all of the Queen's Gambit on Netflix, I still find the idea of people getting fundamentally really excited about chess just a bit boring.
Yeah, I think there should be a Match of the Century and it will be like it's a future Match of the Century. It doesn't exist yet. It's a speculative Match of the Century. It is a Dota 2 final between Team Liquid and EG to prevent World War 4.
Wow.
We'll have already had World War 3.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
That will happen. Okay. And that's going to be a tense week.
I'd play that
and
game.
And I played that game. I mean, I liked it. I liked it. I kind of can't help but wonder if it exists because they, like... Capstone Games came upon an inordinate quantity of chess pieces that they had to get rid of for legal reasons. It does feel odd to me. But
they have to launder about a billion red and blue pawns.
What are we going to do with all of these wooden pawns?
What the hell?
We sent to the printer and they're supposed to come back black and white. They came back blue and red. What are we going to do with blue and red pawns?
Gotta shift them.
And then Mr. Capstone, the leader of the company, goes, I got an idea.
The next set of games we're going to talk about on this podcast are Mindspace and Junk Drawer, though we're predominantly going to be talking about Mindspace because that's the one that Matt's played.
Mindspace and Junk Drawer. It's like, that's kind of properly an analogy of the brain I would like and the brain I have got.
These are Tetris games. Charming little Tetris games. Mindspace is a game about, apparently, cramming all of your different hopes and dreams and thoughts and desires into a regular human brain. And Junk Drawer is about putting a load of crap into a cupboard.
Again, this is just, you know...
I'm sorry, yeah.
It's fine. This is very much relatable content.
So we played Mindspace the other day. It is a game where it's kind of what you'd expect out of a little Tetris game. Every turn, you're going to roll a bunch of dice. You'll have your dice, they'll famously dice roll between 1 and 6. You'll have 6 slots sort of in the middle area where there are 6 cards. A card for 1, a card for 2, a card for 3. So when you roll these dice, these coloured dice, you'll line them up next to all these cards. So the purple 1 is next to that first card. The orange 4 is next to the 4th weird wiggly card. And each of those cards has a little Tetris shape on it. So if I, for example, if the orange dice, so for example, if the orange dice was next to the sort of L block Tetris, I could use that dice to draw an orange L block on my board. And essentially what you're doing is just trying to cram your brain with all of these different colored Tetris blocks, with the caveat that you can never have two blocks of the same color touching each other directly.
Otherwise your brain will overload, having too much compassion in it, and your head will explode.
And each color sort of has its own weird little mini game that you're playing. So like purple, which represents music, creativity.
I think maybe creativity.
Okay. That will multiply with orange if you're next to orange.
Yeah.
Things.
And I think orange was like love.
Yeah. Compassion.
Maybe it was like, yeah, maybe it was just compassion.
Something like that.
Human contact.
Right.
Like creativity makes you want to hug people.
Exactly.
And if you've got creativity and you're hugging people, then you're probably on a list.
I think pink was empathy.
Pink was a heart though.
Pink was like if you had like, let's say you had an L block of pink.
Listen, brains are complicated.
If you
had
an L block of another color that matched your pink one, you'd get points. So that's like, you're looking for similarities.
Right.
You know, like human connection.
Right,
heart to heart.
Yeah, man.
Sure.
Yeah. But we're very much putting together a liberal brain here, because as I say, you cannot have too much compassion. You have to have a layer of compassion, then maybe a layer of thinking about money, and then maybe some other compassion later somewhere.
Yeah. Was blue the cold, hard calculation
logic,
part of the brain?
I think.
Yeah, blue was the profiteer's brain.
You had to have a bit of logic in every part of your brain. Otherwise, you're ruined. You're a mess.
There's also money. Green gave
money.
Which was so funny.
Fascinating. It's like, what am I thinking about? Money.
It was something like the game's sort of like quite like, you know, charming, sort of like slightly hippie theme of like, make sure your brain is well balanced by putting in like all of the different ingredients to make a well-rounded person. Yeah. And one of those ingredients is scads of cash.
It's very much like if Captain Planet came back now for the first time, it would be like fire, lightning, earth, water, money, Venmo.
That was odd.
I felt like this game... It was a cute little box.
Yes.
A fun little roll and write with some jazzy elements. And as
very
you say,
nice
some,
coloured
some
pens.
Very like New York hippie kind of sharp art of like quite minimal. But again, I feel like the manual was like very brief.
It's published by Allplay, previously Board Game Tables, and their manuals leave a lot to be desired.
Yes.
This was a better one.
Yes.
They're getting better. They're improving.
Yeah. I feel like it was interesting. I feel like I didn't quite get it.
Sure.
Like I got it.
You
thematically.
Won.
I know I did.
You
I
made mean, a brain I that was full of purple.
I understood how to play the game, but the money thing just seemed odd to me.
Yeah.
It's like, is this like a spoof? Is this? I don't know. I'll tell you what I liked about this.
Tell me what you liked.
The colors.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say that.
Right?
They're good colors.
Colors, pretty big deal. They're like, in terms of the light spectrum.
Does this prove, I mean, are we struggling for things to say about this?
No,
game?
I'm not.
You're saying,
no.
Just
how dare you?
I like the colors.
Let me finish.
They were really good.
Listen,
let the
colors popped, right?
The colors popped.
The colors popped. The colors of the pens were just outrageously bright, apart from the purple, which was very disappointing.
Yeah. And hard to rub off.
Well, that's the thing. It looked like it was watered down. And I think it was because it was really quite hard to remove. And it's like, if you had it as purple as you'd want it, it ain't ever coming off.
You've
anything.
Got a board that will be 100% purple in just three games.
For
time.
Life.
Yeah.
But the colors were great, not just for that, but because of the fact that like it was quite a colourful, interesting thing. And what I really enjoyed about this was because these colours were so vibrant, filling in the squares was very satisfying.
Yes.
And you were doing it kind of traditional, like just filling them in with nice little neat. Yeah.
This will be the podcast thumbnail.
Yeah.
You'll see the two brains,
the two different types
in parallel. Yes.
But what I found with this is I'm usually all about that. And actually, whenever you have games like Cartographers, is a really good example, right? Where it's like, hey, you know, draw some little green trees, draw some little mountains. And I might do that for a bit, but before long, I'm like, I'm sleepy.
I'm just
going to fill it in with
I don't
whatever.
Care about making this thing.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
And the same is true with like Railroad Ink, anything. It's like, I'll start off trying and then I'm like, yeah, that's a sheep.
Yep.
Get out of here. It's just a circle with some sticks. But with this, because of the fact that the colors were so vibrant and also because of the fact that the grid was weirdly rounded.
Beveled.
Yeah, they kind of made it so that the edge sections, it was like a proper, like slightly 3D vibe.
Yeah, it looks like they've printed a grid onto a sphere or onto a real brain.
Onto a real brain.
It kind of bends at the edges.
And the fact that it wasn't like that neat, sharp grid, and the wobbliness of it, I felt like encouraged me to be a bit more wobbly with how I filled it in. Mm-hmm. And I found that quite enjoyable. And I found that that was actually quite a good connection to the theme of having like neural connections. And I think it was a subtle thing, but it did kind of make the game feel more brainy to me. Mm-hmm. Although, as I said to you during the game, I very much felt that because the colors were so bright that I was just like infesting some brain with some malignant viruses. It's like, nah, blob a bit more of the green and orange in here. Because you probably don't want like big streaks of green stuff in your brain.
No, that's very true. Or purple, for that matter.
Well, I think brains are pretty
kind of purple. I guess red would be one that you
red
would
is
want in there.
A bit of probably a no-no.
Danger.
I don't know what colours are supposed to be in your brain.
Green is just the definite no-no,
send us a postcard.
Or blue.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know. If you know about brains, what are the top three worst colours to have in your brain?
Email in. I think that's actually like maybe a good like connection to jump on to just very briefly talking about Junk Drawer, which is that I think both of these games are like good Tetris games. They're good, they're pleasing Tetris games. And I think there's definitely something about... When we joked that like, well, they're different games for different brains. One of them is the hippy dippy brain game, or one of them is the make sure that you have a mercenary attitude towards organizing your junk drawer. They are similar games. Like the theme of them is doing a lot of the heavy lifting. So in Junk Drawer, you basically have another Tetris puzzle, but instead of your grid being just a big blank grid, you instead have four smaller grids that are divided by these like big impassable walls.
And they're drawers.
And they're the four drawers of your junk drawer. And essentially what you have is every person has a big pile of Tetris pieces representing all the junk. So the sort of wiggly piece might be like a little measuring tape, or a straight piece might be a pencil. And what you do is you flip over cards from the middle, and that will show you, hey, you've got to place this piece in your junk drawer. And let's say I take the little straight piece and I put it in my top left quadrant, my top left drawer. For the rest of the round, I can't put anything in that top left drawer again. So every piece has to go, you do four pieces per round, and each piece has to go in a separate separate quadrant.
Right.
So you do four cards, four quadrants, then you do it again. So you're sealing off possibilities every single time. And I think what this leads to is a Tetris game where you have a whole lot more sort of like screeching around the table as people are really hoping. It also, by the way, thematically makes no sense.
Yeah.
Because it's like, that's not how people organize drawers.
No, that's like somebody trying to tidy up whilst having like a specific OCD.
Yeah.
Like,
it's like,
and I don't say that as humor. I say that as like, that seems quite hellish. It's not a way to organize things.
It's like, you know, when they say like, if you have like a big job of like tidying up to do, you should break it down into like smaller tasks.
Yeah.
And you should give yourself like 5 minutes to do each task. It's like someone's done that to the extreme that they've given themselves like 3 seconds for each task. It's like the task is find out where to put the sellotape and then you're done.
I feel like it's quite upsetting to me because... I don't mean that like seriously, but it's like, it is faintly upsetting the fact that it's like, okay, well, you know, the idea of like, you draw a pen and you're like, okay, I'll put the pen in that drawer. And then you have a pencil and you're like, well, I want to put the pencil next to the pen.
Yes, it's
and
what
I
should go.
Not allowed. That is like, really, it's fascinating and hellish. And I kind of like it because it's called Junk Drawer. It's this idea of like, well, screw you. It's just stuff getting crammed into drawers, which I have that as well.
Yeah.
But there's
that's
something
you're doing this
most
morning.
Of these games, because I'm thinking about it, like, you know, I really like Cartographers. I know it's pretty vanilla and lots of people are like, fine, whatever. But what I liked about it was it had that balance of having occasionally like, oh, that's a bit tricky, a bit smoky. But mostly it's just having a nice time organizing things in a way that's like pleasing and getting you loads of points. And I feel like the two extremes I want in this genre are either have a nice time, have moments where you keep going, oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Or,
oh, lovely, that goes right there.
Have a horrible time. And there's something thematically about this of being like, I'm not allowed to organize my drawers in a way that thematically makes sense that I find quite upsetting.
Yes.
In a great way.
And so I think those games are like, broadly represent the sort of the two ends of that spectrum, and that Junk Drawer is a little bit more chaotic, a little bit more cruel, and I think Mindspace is actually quite generous and nice, and it's more of a game about sort of evenly filling in your grid. Like, there's something really clever about the way that the little Tetris pieces almost sit on this, almost like a conveyor belt in Mindspace. One of them gets fed off the end and one of them joins on the start, so when you roll the dice, you're likely to get a piece, you know, sort of what the range of pieces is mm-hmm. that's going to arrive. Whereas junk drawer is much more chaotic because you have like 20 pieces or something to place and it could be any one of them. But yeah, good little Tetris games.
Yeah, fun.
Neither crazy remarkable, but fun, but nice, but good.
Nice.
Should we move on?
Shapes. Finally today, we have Shenanigrams, a game of little raccoons having an awful time playing Scrabble.
Who would do something so cruel?
So this is a strange, light family word game mm-hmm. that I liked a lot more than I expected to. And was, I mean, partially I think that's because when I played it with Tom, it was infuriating him, which is kind of great. The way this game works is much like with Scrabble, you have a secret selection of little word letter tiles mm-hmm. behind your screen. But unlike in Scrabble, where you are tasked with trying to make words immediately on your own, in this you just play one tile at a time. You take it in turns to play one tile. And the idea initially is you're just collectively working towards creating a word. Mm-hmm. And immediately, this is kind of an interesting one because you have to be able to, if it says like, if challenged, you have to be able to say like,
this is what I'm working towards.
Like, what? Like what could that be as a word? But we were finding it quite enjoyable just to say the words that we were building,
that
towards.
We were thinking in our head that was what was going to happen.
Just aloud, which was a fun little kind of rule that we just sort of eventually made. And especially when the words were quite obvious, then inventing words that didn't exist that you were going towards was a lot of fun.
There was something as well, like there was something very funny about being incredibly unrealistic about the word you were working towards cooperatively. So you put like an S down and you were like, saxophone.
Yeah, exactly. But the idea is you are just like taking it in turns, putting letters down, much as you would, because there's no board, you're just putting them on the table as if you're building a like a Scrabble style thing. And as long as you reasonably are building towards a word that could exist on the board, mm-hmm. it's fine. Fill your boots. However, as soon as a word exists in any form, as soon as it's like, bang, that's a word now.
Yep.
Then whoever created that word puts one of their little like
tags.
So, yeah, they're kind of tags. They're like transparent little slivery things that you just lay on top of the word in that direction, being like, that's my word. Mm-hmm. And then you keep doing that until one player has no tags left, until they have put all of their tags down on words on the table. And then the next player has 5 seconds to basically try and steal back a word. And then the game's over. Stealing back words?
Tell me about that.
Oh, well.
Wow.
Well.
Well.
As soon as there is a word, you can mess with words to steal them. Mm-hmm. Which means if I'd written bad, for example, and you had an S, you could just swap out the B for an S and change it to sad.
As long
would
as,
make me sad.
As long as any word in the other direction is still valid as well.
Yes. So if you had like slip.
Slip.
No, that doesn't. Blip. Yeah.
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 Blip and slip.
If you had blip and I changed it to slip, then great. That would mean that I'd stolen two words.
In one go.
If those words, neither of those words were already mine.
Terrifying.
But in addition to that, you can also do freaky deaky stuff. Mm-hmm. Not only can you swap a letter out, you can obviously Scrabble style, you can add letters to the beginning and the end. Mm-hmm. Well, only one is the rule. And then also you can insert, which means you can just slide a letter into the middle of a word anywhere, pushing the rest of it down, and then again, stealing that word. Mm-hmm. We then found that we got ourselves into a bit of a minefield with rules questions because of the fact that you start to have this thing of being like, well, like the sliding words open seems crazy.
Yeah.
But actually you realize as the game goes on, there's not many times you can do that.
No.
Because as soon as things start networking together and like becoming a kind of web of words, Scrabble style,
there's few places you can actually place.
Few places you can do that whilst it also retains the validity of words that already exist. And also we had the situation of Tom being like, but why can't I put this here? And it'd been like, because it can't ever become a word, because it's going to hit another word below it before it can become anything.
Yeah.
And that being a kind of inception level word game rule in a way. This word doesn't have a capacity to ever become a word.
It's a runt.
But fundamentally, this game was really annoying. but in a way that I thought was purposeful and delightful.
I think I'm coming around to your view on this game, which is that you were like, it's the perfect game for people who like just putting the letter S on a word in Scrabble.
This feels like this is like, what if you took people who just put an S on the end of words in Scrabble and take all the points, and made an entire game about that. Mm-hmm. And I think for a family word game, that is delightful. And
I agree.
I think they know that because the artwork is all of these like cheeky little raccoons mm-hmm. all stealing things from each other. Mm-hmm. And it isn't like, there's no sense of honor within this game. It's like somebody else has done a long word. Cool. You could do lots of different things and now it's yours.
Yes.
But you could do clever things, but mostly it's a case of Tom knowing clever words and then me just putting an S on the end of it. And it's like, that's mine now. And there's probably nothing you can do to get it back.
It was incredibly... that was the problem, was you put an S on it. And then it's like, there's... Because of the fact that our grid was so compact straight away, there was like nothing I could do about it.
Yeah. And also we were playing with a level of tactics which were quite cruel. I think we were both trying to make words that we knew couldn't be changed into other words.
Yeah.
Like really strange words where it's like, you're not going to
there's
swap
no way,
a B for an S there.
Like I think one of them was like applause. It was like our core word.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's no way you can like shift that around in irritating ways. That's stuck.
Yeah.
And that was the sort of hub that we then spoke everything else off in a way that was infuriating.
Foundation of applause.
It was it's an annoying game for annoying people.
I had fun playing it.
I had fun too.
Because Tom was getting annoyed. And I think for that reason, like I think it's fun. And that's a brave statement, I know, to go out there and say that. But I think that often the problem with word games, and the reason why I love word games, but I actually don't play them very often.
No.
And I have a few in my collection and they very rarely get to the table. And it's because word games are like trivia games.
They're divisive.
Well, they're not just divisive. They're one of the few genres of games where actually abilities you have outside of the game affect your ability to be good at the game.
Sure.
In the same way that like I'm not good at quizzes, which are arguably games because I'm not good at facts. Mm. But like I am good at word games because I'm decent at words.
I've done words before.
And if haven't done words, then you're less good at them. Like because you don't know as many words. Whereas this, it doesn't matter because you just... keep trying to put an S on everything.
Yeah, exactly. And you go, is that a word? And yeah, the thing of that rule, going back to it, but that rule of like, you have to say, or you have to be working towards a word if challenged.
Yeah.
It's just so delightful being like, you're putting that letter there, that's not anything. And you're like, no, I could spell spibbling. Like, that's nothing.
Yeah.
Take that back.
And it's not a perfect design by any means. And I can tell that there's things where like, the reason you have that rule of like, after someone's run out of things, you have the next player has 5 seconds to steal a word or the game's over.
Yes.
That's clearly a rule because otherwise you would have people staring at the table for an hour going, no. There must be something I can
There's a way through this.
But we kind of found that we were automatically playing it by having like stuff up our sleeves specifically for that.
Yeah.
But again, I quite like that. The fact that it was like, I'm going to win. And you immediately were like, no. And you had something you were sitting on waiting for that moment. Mm. But then eventually you ran out of bullets.
I was stuck with so many Qs at the end of that game. Qs and Js. And there's an element of like, Scrabble has Q's and J's and Z's and Y's.
But there's an
Y's.
Advantage to them.
Yeah.
If you can play them.
A load of points. But you're just stuck with Q's in this game. That just sucks.
Yeah.
They're just bad.
But you could have spent a whole turn just getting rid of all of them.
Well, that's bad as well. That's what I mean to say that it's not necessarily a perfect game or a perfect design. You know, there is a lot of like roughness to the edges. But I completely agree that it's like, this is exactly the kind of game that my family would like. And I'd kind of be infuriated by the fact that they liked it so much.
Although I think you do still have the advantage. If you know lots of words, then you means you have way more scope. But actually, I found that I've never played a word game before where just the idea that you could insert letters into things, mm-hmm. that kind of broke my brain in a way. I couldn't really contend with that. And every now and then I saw opportunities for it, but it's like, oof, this is like actually the capacity for big brainness to take mm-hmm. over here and you to be doing some killer stuff is huge.
Yeah.
Bigger than I could touch. But I like that mixture of it being like, yeah, okay, if you are like Captain Word expert, then there's a lot of room here for you to be devilish.
Mm.
But there's also a ton of room for kids to just be annoying and still win.
Yeah.
And I think that like playing word games where you have a much more level playing field is very rare because words are hard.
Mm. We had a good time playing it.
Yeah, it's decent.
We laughed a lot. Silly little game.
Silly little game.
That's that. Is that the end of the podcast?
That's the end.
That's it.
That's all the podcast that we've written for this week. Thank you so much for turning up.
It's crazy that they're all pre-scripted.
It takes such a long to script them.
It's crazy.
It's really... I almost wonder why we do it sometimes.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of effort. If you want more Shut Up and Sit Down content, there is a playthrough of Undaunted Normandy on the YouTube channel. Our first playthrough in like ages, where me and you go head-to-head. and we fight for the strawberries.
Yes.
Who will win? Who wins the Donkey Kong Banana Bunch? You've got to watch and find out.
Yeah, and I think that's actually pretty... If you enjoy the podcast, it's pretty podcasty vibes.
It's very podcasty.
We're just having a chat and playing Undaunted and having a nice time with fruit.
Yeah, exactly, of an evening. You can find that. There's going to be a big video review very soon. I'm working on the John Company video that's coming out very soon.
Yeah, we've got some fun stuff coming out. Yeah. We've got some big reviews of some great games.
Oh.
And we've got some like gift guide stuff as well coming out for people. So you can know what gifts are.
What gifts
as a social
what
construct
gifts to buy other people or yourself this holiday season. And as a final little juicy bonus extra, we should tell people that there's a bonus podcast they can listen to.
Yes.
If they donate to Shut Up and Sit Down, if they keep this show on the road,
if they are not content with the content quantities,
there's more
content.
There's a podcast where me and Matt talk about Essen.
Yes.
You weren't there, I was there. I tell you about some games, some people and some vibes. That's available if you donate through our website or through our Patreon. That felt very official, that last bit that I did there.
Yeah.
I think it's something about we're recording this in an actual podcast
that
studio.
That was the day that Tom became president.
Yeah.